The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. Another edition of We the People Radio. You're joining your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and our producer, Bob Martin. We are chatting and streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us, and the call-in number is 530-605-4567. I encourage you to go to wethepeopleradio.us, check out the webpage that our great friend Robert Exter does for us on a weekly basis. Everything about our show today you will find on that webpage, as well as a link to every show that we've done in the past 3 years. And if it's your first time tuning in, this show is about everything under the umbrella of limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution. Everything under that umbrella, which basically includes pretty much everything. I can't think of anything that's not under that umbrella.
Our show could be about anything.
Yeah. And, boy, it's so nice to have the heat gone. Oh, my God. So
I walked the dog today with a coat on.
Oh,
so
nice.
Awesome. That's why I'm tardy.
Oh, you have no eyelashes today.
I know. I don't.
It's okay.
I forfeited eyelashes for a walk.
I totally get that.
Who needs mascara? What the heck? Who cares? It's just us. It's just us kids.
Yeah.
And Bob's always busy over there. He doesn't even notice.
And that's why we're on radio, not on TV.
Exactly. What are they going to do? Write a mean blog about us? Speaking of which, did you read the one on the Huffington Post about Whole Foods?
Oh, that was hilarious.
If you guys need a good laugh, seriously, go to, and this, I know this seems counterintuitive, but
it was hilarious.
It's on the Huffington Post, and it's called Surviving Whole Foods.
I mean, they talk about stuff growing in your yoga pants.
Honestly, it was hilarious. For any of you that ever have been to places like that, mm-hmm. You go in and you're like, oh, man. I just so don't get it, and I super don't fit here.
Yeah. Or you walk in and you look at the people who are taking themselves so very seriously.
Yeah.
And you say to yourself, really?
Well, he talks about how this lady almost gets run. She's pregnant, carrying a baby and a bag of groceries, and she just is pulling into the parking lot, and there's some angry guy in a Prius who like basically tries to run her over, and he's honking at her, and he's got the little, you know, the little namaste sticker on the back, and I think it means, I don't know, relaxing or something.
Yeah.
And he talks about how this Prius crept up on her like a panther.
Her writing is really good.
Really, really well written. So anyway, Surviving Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And she's a comedian. The gal
is. It was hilarious.
But it was super funny. Somebody I work with sent it to me, and I was reading it right before bed. And it was one of those where you're like gasping for air, and then you got to go read it to somebody because it's so funny you don't want to do it alone.
Absolutely. Hey, and on
super worth it.
On a more serious note,
we have those occasionally.
There's a
downer.
We have petitions being circulated people can sign, hopefully to get something on the ballot in 2014 to overturn the transgender bathroom law.
The bathroom bill.
So look for those.
We will
at a Walmart near you or a tea party.
Is that the one out in the lobby?
That is one in the lobby, and it's there for you to sign, Bob.
Yeah.
And Bill and Aaron, if you haven't.
Could you bring me the bathroom bill, Willis?
Yeah,
it's in the back of my purse.
So we're going to chat about that a little bit. And,
yeah, we could tell people what it's called.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know
if you would like copies.
Yeah, and I don't know the number of signatures required. I'm hoping Sally's listening, and she'll put that on the chat room. But
a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you always...
In case people just heard a repeat of the last 7 seconds, I just found out we were working without a net. We were not on 7 second delay, but we are now.
Oh, great.
So do we have like a 7 second fast forward or what?
No, we had a 7 second replay.
Oh. So it was like,
okay.
So that's all, folks.
We didn't say anything bad.
Sure we did.
No, thank God.
Come on, we did. I'll tell people that. Okay, so this is a referendum to overturn the non-discrimination requirements for school programs and activities, which I know sounds bizarre. So you might see somebody standing out there getting signatures, and you'd be like, what? Okay, if signed by the required number of registered voters and timely filed with the Secretary of State, a petition will place on the statewide ballot for a challenge to a state law previously approved by the legislature. right? That sounds good. The law must then be approved by a majority of voters in the next statewide election. The law would permit elementary and secondary school students to participate in sex-segregated school programs and activities, including athletic teams and competitions, and use facilities, those are bathrooms, consistent with the student's gender identity.
And I guess the
which sounds totally screwy, but bottom mm-hmm. line is, if your child was born with outdoor plumbing, aka your child is a boy, then right now under state law, if your boy decides that he gender identifies, that's like all happening between your ears. If he identifies mm-hmm. as a girl that day, he can sign up for girls volleyball. He can shower in the girls' locker room, mm-hmm. Use the girls' bathroom. And vice versa.
And there are no restrictions, no limitations, no boundaries on this. It's pretty much a free-for-all. You know, if a 16-year-old boy decides to act on a dare, you know, and his friends say, hey, I dare you to go in there and shower with Susie over there, because you know you've always wanted to, then all he has to do is say, well, you know, I kind of felt like a girl.
Yeah.
I mean, there's absolutely no...
Well, how confusing for kids. Yeah. I mean, you know, and if your child has an issue and that's a real issue for your child, that's a very small percentage of the population.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is.
And they could use
like 1%.
Yeah, and they could use the nurse's bathroom or something. I mean, there are accommodations that could be made, but instead they had to, you know, drag everybody into it.
Yeah, and the problem is that kids are very self-conscious at that stage of their life, and things are changing, and I mean, Their privacy. I mean, you know how many kids don't want anybody coming into their room. Kids really need their privacy, and to just open up the door and take the lid off completely and say, you know, anybody that wants to go in, feel free.
Well, you just have all sorts of things. I mean, and let's face it. Look at all the things the schools are now having to do.
Yeah.
So now you have bathroom confusion. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. you've got to. You know, I don't know.
And it's this isn't about discriminating against anybody. It's simply. You know, why are we changing everything for the tiniest, tiniest minority and making the majority accommodate the tiny minority?
Yeah.
Why are we doing that?
It creates chaos at school. So it's called the referendum to overturn non-discrimination requirements for school programs and activities. Because normally you're thinking, okay, discrimination is bad, so why would I want to overturn a discrimination anyway? Right. It sounds counterintuitive, but when you see that, it's the bathroom. Ask him if it's the bathroom bill, mm-hmm. and that's pretty much what everyone's calling it.
And I don't really have an issue with co-ed sports teams, but kids shouldn't be showering together.
No. Besides that, you got a lot of schools, especially out where we live, you know, in the big cities and stuff. You have a lot of the kindergartens are separate. Then you have, like, first through fourth or maybe fifth grade together, then you have 6, 7, 8. But up here, you've got a lot of schools that are K-8, you know,
right.
You've got some that are higher than that.
Right.
It just, it creates a mess for the teachers. And the teachers, of course, aren't allowed to say anything, so.
No. And, their hands
messy.
Are completely tied. And,
messy and silly.
It has potential for a lot of problems down the road.
So, there we go. The legislature went off the rails. Besides that, okay, let's get down to it. Really, the California State Legislature, their biggest issue in the state
mm-hmm.
is to spend time, energy, and money monitoring the bathrooms in mm-hmm. schools.
Yeah. So clearly they have nothing else to do. Hey, so Sally says that if you're in the Shasta County area, you can pick up those initiatives at Bibles, Books, and More on Hilltop Drive, and we need 505,000 signatures by the second week in November.
Oh, good. Somebody who actually knows the facts. Thank God for Sally. Mm, thanks,
she's
Sal.
Awesome.
Can you
good
just,
morning, Debbie Bacigalupi. I know you're tuning in.
Can you hear all the haters out there, though?
Yeah.
Oh, it figures it's at Bible, Books, and More.
Yeah.
Hooray for Bible, Books, and More.
Mm-hmm. Still are the majority.
Exactly. It's just something that doesn't need to be legislated, and it certainly doesn't need to be legislated on top of
mm-hmm.
parents and teachers and all that. What a nutty, we're going to change all their curriculum,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we're talking about that next week. I segued
Excellent.
Myself. I don't know if I can call it a segue if I accidentally did
Training for Treason. Oh.
We're going to be talking about the new book, Training for Treason, next week. The Harmful Agenda Behind Education for Sustainability with Holly Swanson.
Nice. Let me see.
So that is next week's deal. You want to give them a little snippet off the back?
Oh, yeah. Save the children or you will lose the philosophy of the classroom in one generation. And the philosophy of the classroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. That was Abraham Lincoln. The education for sustainability movement is drastically altering the curriculum in our schools, changing the role of public education, and imposing a political agenda on our innocent children. The aim of this indoctrination program is to train America's children to be against our form of government, the free enterprise system, religious beliefs, and much more.
There you go.
Great. Where'd you get the book?
I got the book from Holly. She spoke at the Wairika Tea Party a week ago.
Okay.
Home number. And she will be at the Reading Tea Party a week from tomorrow.
Oh, and she brings books with her?
Correct.
Excellent.
So I just happened to snag one of the books early.
Okay. Great.
Because I thought, well, hey, we should promote that for next week.
Absolutely.
She's the one who wrote Set Up and Sold Out about mm-hmm. the green agenda.
Okay.
So as she got digging into the green agenda, mm-hmm. she found out that also overlaid into Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's a political philosophy, mm-hmm. not an educational philosophy.
Yeah.
And so she does a great job of explaining that. I won't go any further. That is next week.
Great.
All right. So when we return from our break, we're going to talk to Cindy Sitaway from Idaho. And Robert has probably aptly titled the program Wolves Love Sheep. That's bad love. That's when love goes wrong. We'll have to have some bad love songs. But she is a rancher up in Idaho. Her husband is a state senator. And I've got all sorts of information on the website. Please go to wethepeopleradio.us and get a load of the pictures. You're going to need pictures with today's show. Be right back with you here at We the People on KCNR.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about this? Feel like a woman.
In honor of the bathroom bill.
Kudos to you, Bob.
Jeez. Good one. That's terrible.
That's hilarious.
That is hilarious.
Oh, welcome back to We the People Radio. We're going to be talking to Cindy Sitaway, and Cindy has had the pleasure of having the greatest wolf-caused sheep loss ever recorded in one instance in the United States.
Not a good record to hold.
No.
Absolutely. Hey, Cindy, are you in there with us?
I'm here.
We got chatting about the stupid California legislature and their dopey bathroom bill where they think girls need to be able to use the boys' bathroom and boys need to use the girls, depending on their sexual orientation that day. Of course, it might change the next day. So that's the kind of pressing legislature we're working on down here. So of course we the citizens have to waste our time doing a referendum.
Yeah, and Aaron, haven't you actually gotten emails from people that thought that was a joke that live in other places?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. People around the country think we're kidding.
Yeah,
like no.
That's a great bit, Aaron.
Yeah, yeah. That's my best material. So anyway, sorry we were a little tardy. Because we were busy doing a hatchet job on the California legislature to try to,
mm-hmm.
you know, get them maybe back to, oh, I don't know, a myriad of other issues that we could be working on.
Yeah, real things.
So now we will snap to Idaho, which is like looking into the future for us in California.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at the past in California, which was the bathroom bill. Mm-hmm. The future is wolves. So for all the people who think that it might not come to a town near you, oh, it is. It's coming. Hey, so Cindy, how long have you guys been wrestling with wolves up there?
Well, probably back to when they were here naturally back in the late 1800s. We started about 1886, our family here in Idaho raising sheep, and we pretty much do it similar to how we did it back then. There's a few modern conveniences that we've added, but especially some of our summer range where we're having a lot of the wolf problems, a lot of that is very similar area, and some of the exact same area where we were back in the late 1800s. So once they were eradicated, then we, you know, just had to deal with the regular predators, bears and coyotes and wolves. Luckily, we're not here. And then, of course, in the mid 90s, they came back, and they've continued to increase. And so as the numbers have increased, so have our death losses from wolf kills.
Lovely. And the big, I mean, back in the early days, I mean, you could shoot them, right? I mean, they were predators, and you managed the predators against the, you know, against your animals. Now,
that's correct.
Now, what are your choices?
Well, of course, everything changed with the Endangered Species Act. Changed considerably on how you manage different things, both bears and wolves. So now, if we do catch them in our sheep, harassing or killing the sheep, then the landowner and the livestock owner can kill the animal. That wasn't the case initially with the wolves, but as you know, the numbers have increased, and of course they are delisted here in Idaho now, that we can do that. That's not the case for other people, though. It's got to be, you know, the immediate danger that they're right in your sheep, and then you can't take them out. They're also, now we have hunting tags you can buy in Idaho that came about a few years ago that has really helped to bring the population down, but still not enough to help us with our losses.
And how long did that take before you got some common sense in that thing? Because they're not talking about any of that in California. They're talking about just a straight, you know, ESA listing.
Right. And that's part of the reason some of the livestock people were more amenable to the 10J rule to allow them in as a non-essential population. Although there were sightings occasionally of wolves in the area, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, no really confirmed sightings. So with the reintroduction with the non-essential population, we felt like we would have a little more control than if they were not, if they just came back on their own, then we would have no capability to defend our animals from them. And that was one of the buy-ins that got some of the livestock people to buy into this back in the, 80s, early 90s. And, you know, I'm kind of sad that we did buy into some of that, because I think we would have been better off just if they did repopulate naturally, because I doubt if we would ever have had the problems that we're having now. So it was just some of the promises made early on, they were changed. You know, when you're negotiating, what you get to at the very end isn't what you think you're going to get to. So there's always a lot of surprises. So I'd always, you know, I would say be very cautious about anything you're doing in California, because the promises made aren't usually kept.
Yeah, sure. That's absolutely true. I listened to a talk given by a Central California assemblywoman earlier in this week, and that is the one thing she said, to be very, very careful, even if you are a Republican in the California State Legislature, because the promises that are made are almost never kept.
Surprise!
So this large wolf kill actually just happened in August, is that correct?
Night?
Yes, it did. And, you know, what's interesting, I had given testimony back in, I think early 90s or mid-90s at a congressional hearing in Washington, D.C., and I was kind of explaining our terrain and how our operation works. We have 9 bands of sheep, 9 herds, over 1,000 in each one of ewes, plus their lambs, and we're in a very high area in our summer range. We pack into the mountains. It's not accessible by vehicles at all. You'd have to have a pack string of horses to get back to where our camps are. And the men stay in cook tents and teepees, and the terrain is so rough. And I said in that testimony that in this type of terrain, the likelihood of a pileup may happen from one incident, that we could have multiple deaths from one attack at night due to the nature to pile up and suffocate. And so that was really, interesting when I went back and looked at that testimony, because that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't seem to understand, you know, the terrain. This isn't in our backyard. This is a difficult area to get to. And, then you've got to get Wildlife Services in there. And when you're getting hit in five other herds at the same time, and some of them 100 miles apart, it's hard to get the federal agents in there to actually confirm the losses.
Well, you know, it kind of reminds me of the average misconception about what forest land looks like, especially if it's federal land. Somebody talks about a nice leisurely walk through the woods, and they just assume that there's lots of space in between the trees and the sunlight's coming through and there are flowers growing all over and you're going to have a picnic, when in fact unmanaged lands are very treacherous, very steep, and actually very dangerous, and it's very difficult to navigate through those forests. So it sounds similar.
Yes, it is. You know, when I go up there, even it's hard for me to even imagine how our sheep herders keep all the sheep together. Each herd has two men with it, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, plus guard dogs and herd dogs. But it is so dense up there. I mean, it's really hard to see. And, yeah, I give it, you know, I really have to appreciate these good workers that we have that actually can keep the herds together, because they do round them up and get them bedded down at night. And our men also will teepee out with those sheep at night and bed down with them, because that's usually when the wolves will hit in the evening or you know, the dark at night, and it's really hard to even kill a wolf if it is attacking, because you can't see. You just know what's going on, and that's what happened in this case. My son received a call at 1 a.m. in the morning, or early morning of the attack, and the herder said that the wolves were in the sheep or something was in it. He could hear they were in it, and it was a real problem, and he couldn't see what was going on. And then, of course, as daybreak came, then he saw the mass pileup.
Ugh. And you know, for people who've never, you know, really dealt with sheep, there are lots of jokes out there, you know, about how dopey sheep are. I mean, they really are. I mean, sheep would never make it on their own. Mm-hmm. I mean, they wouldn't be good wild animals.
Yeah, they are. They're pretty helpless, but yet they're a wonderful animal.
They provide
food and fiber, and you know, they're biblical. I mean, open the Bible and it's full of sheep. So we have learned a lot of lessons, but they are defenseless against a lot of things. They really are, and that's why they have the caretakers, the shepherds, with them all the time.
Yeah, they don't have the wily. You know, Cindy and I were talking when I called her the other day, and because, you know, we had like three little sheep out in our field, and one of them got sick one time, and I thought, oh well, you know, I'm like obviously not a veterinarian, so we had a, you know, livestock vet that lived pretty close, and called over there, and the guy started laughing. He goes, "You want us to come and look at your sheep?" I was like, "Well, you know, coughing and making weird noises, and I think she's sick." And the guy said, "We don't do veterinary work on sheep." He said, "You know, sheep spend their whole life finding ways to die. You know, that's their goal. So just get a new one." And I thought, "Wow, kind of heartless coming from a vet."
Yeah, that is typical, though, yeah, because it is hard to, especially when you're dealing with thousands and thousands, as we are. You know, we do a lot of our own veterinarian work, but our job is to keep them alive. That's what we do. And each one is handled individually. We shed lamb, and from the time they're born, we start lambing mid-February and go through mid-April, and it's very labor-intensive, a lot of work. And then we get them to the stage, and then when I saw those pictures, my son immediately, when he took pictures, sent them to me on my phone, and it just made me sick.
Oh.
Just sick, because all that work, all that effort, all the genetics that go into it, and just all wasted. Just
sure.
All wasted.
And then you guys had to post warnings. I mean, it's on the webpage for people to see.
Well, my daughter did. She lives up in that area and hikes. She hikes up there a lot, and of course, wolves only eat fresh kill, if they do eat at all. They don't go back, you know, to eat something that's been there for a while. But it draws in bears. The bears do. You know, the older, the stinkier, the better for bears. And the, you know, coyotes will eat on things that have been dead for several days. But she was concerned about the hikers, you know, up in that area, because it's a popular area for hikers. And so she posted, because she was real concerned, you know, that they stay away from that area so that they wouldn't have any problems with the bears.
Sure, and the warning says an active wolf pack killed 176 head of livestock between Fog Hill and Pole Canyon on Saturday. Bears and scavengers will be feeding in the area. Exercise caution. And it has a picture of all the sheep just piled up. And that was how they were found. You guys didn't do that.
Pardon?
I mean, there were people who said, why did they pile them all up like that? You guys didn't.
Oh, no, we didn't. That's how they found. No.
Yeah, that's how they found them.
We did go up. Yeah, we did go. We called Wildlife Services, the federal trappers, and they met my son up there with the herders, and we did have to count them. And they have to verify, you know, that they were wolf kills. And, you know, that's another misconception, because back even when Defenders of Wildlife had some compensation, you have to have the federal agents there to confirm that's a confirmed loss from a wolf. But there's probable losses at the same, you know, that they can't say for sure. There'll be, you know, maybe five they can confirm and another five that might be probable kills, and then there'll be maybe 10 missing. So the numbers that, you know, if you're tracking your death loss, it's hard to really get a firm number on it. We're a little more fortunate because we have herders with our sheep, and, you know, we try to keep them counted fairly close on a regular basis, but people that are in the cattle business that turn them out on a summer range, when they bring them back in the fall and then they're out hundreds and hundreds, it's too late to call the Wildlife Services, and there's no idea how many losses for sure, and no way to confirm those losses were from wolves.
Wow. There we go. There, you know, yeah. we've done several programs on this topic of wolves. The reason we're so fixated, just for people that are like, oh my God, are they talking about wolves again? The reason we're fixated is that on October 2nd, here in California, I mean, as the federal government is looking to delist the wolves and have in many states, California is looking to list them. Well, you know, the OR7 project and all that, as far as I know, that project cost California about $500,000. I mean, how stupid is that? Mm-hmm. You got one wolf wandering around with a blue collar on it and with the tagging and the following and the blah, blah, blah. I don't know what else they're doing. And having all these meetings about, you know, wolf management and all that. That's $500,000. So if we actually have them in the state and they have to, quote, unquote, manage them, imagine all the personnel. Tons of personnel. And then, you know, I mean, we've done many programs on how quickly wolves breed.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have a population out of control. But the hearing's on October 2nd. Robert's going to pull that up on the page
and
here.
Where's the hearing?
Sacramento. And actually, if you go early at 12 noon, Americans for Prosperity and the Liberty and Property Rights Coalition are having a luncheon from 12:30 to 1:15. They'll be screening Wolves in Government Clothing, which is a new film that David Spady put together. It's about 45 minutes. From 1 to 3, they're going to have a panel. They're going to call the panel, Can Wolves and Humans Coexist in Populated Areas? And at 5 p.m., the doors open for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife hearing in the Martinique Ballroom. 6:30 to 8:30 is a hearing and public comment. So that information will all be up on the site, and we'll announce that again, of course, before we get off here. But that's on October 2nd, so it's coming, folks. And if you think it's not going to be a big deal, well, I live in a town, you know, I live in a city, I live in Southern California, I live in, you know, wherever. I don't care if you don't even live in this state. This is a major issue, because when these guys can bring in, that's a non-native species.
Mm-hmm.
So how we can identify
call it endangered.
Endangered, yeah, use the Endangered Species Act to bring in a non-native species is a little bit confusing for most people.
Well, they prey on people's ignorance.
Isn't that nice? The wolves aren't always with four legs.
No.
Hey, we better take a quick break. I just noticed it's 20 till. And we will be having all our breaks at the end of the hour. Hang with us. We'll be right back with Cindy Sidaway here at We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM.
Behind.
we're talking about the misconception of two-legged and four-legged wolves.
I don't think we have any misconceptions about the two-legged kind.
No, that's the government.
So we were, in reading the information on WeThePeopleRadio.us that supports our show today, we were, it talks a little bit about the compensation plan, the federal compensation plan, but how unlikely it is that you actually will ever get anything from that. Why is that, Cindy?
They're just not allocating any funds for it. I know there is a program that matches some state funds and federal funds for compensation, and of course we work with the department, Idaho Department of Fish and Game, and they do have some depredation money, but it's just not being funded. So the losses from last year, I think they were about $150,000 here in Idaho, and that were, confirmed losses that were reported. None of those received any funding, and then just last month there was some money that came in, but not nearly enough. I think there was maybe $80,000 that they've got to allocate for the 2012 losses. So they just prorate it, and there is a percentage, that's given across the board for all depredation. And then it's unlikely that any funds will come for this year. You just never know. And that's not why we're in the business anyway. The compensation does help, but it's kind of like, publishing a newspaper to go to the bottom of a birdcage. It's not why we do it. It's not. We just don't want the compensation. Isn't at all what we're in the business to do. We put a lot of time and effort into the genetics and building up our herds, and we have, we're very proud of those genetics and the right feed and everything, and then just to have this huge loss to wolves. The compensation isn't the answer. It keeps us in business, maybe, but there's a lot bigger picture here.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about the Endangered Species Act, there might be a few people that are actually in it for the animals, but I think the majority of the hype over this is just control over our lands, our public and our private lands. And we're having huge losses on our private lands as well. We have 160 acres that we use for to put our rams in. And we had about 200 rams that we put in there, and we lost like 40 one year, put them back in, and lost another 38 the next year. So we have just quit using that 160 acres that we've used for years to pasture our ram sheep. And we just can't use it now because the wolves continue to come there, and we think, how stupid are we to keep putting them up there if the wolves are going to just keep killing them? So we pretty much just abandoned that, and that's private land. I don't know how people in the cities would feel about, having the loss of their land like that. And so many of them are the ones that are really pro, let's have the wolves, but not in my backyard.
Yeah, they think all that thing, that's all great, but they're not affected. Debbie's on here, and she asked us to ask you about the loss of horses and dogs and why the radicals don't want to mention those losses.
Oh, right. People can identify, I think, with horses and dogs, because when we have our guard dogs killed, I'll be telling someone, we had 10 lambs killed in our herd, and then the wolves killed the guard dog and tore it apart, and they said, oh, not the dog. Well, they identify with the dog. But this summer, we had one of our herders in the mountains on a horse, and the horse saw the wolf bucked off the herder, bolted, and went over the cliff and fell to its death.
Oh,
suddenly, the herder was bucked off before the horse went over the cliff. Then that was just this summer. And then we've had, probably 4 dogs killed this summer. We've had 10 over all the last few years.
And the guard dogs just rip them apart. And I don't think people realize how closely these wolves can encroach.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're in the West, and like Aaron said, not everybody lives in a rural area, but we're all surrounded by mountains for the most part.
But what you hear in these meetings, because I've sat in the Fish and Game meetings, and the EPIC and the Center for Biological Diversity and all these other nutty people, they all, this one gal, of course she's sitting there in her yoga pants with her legs crossed, with her inner
namaste.
Yeah, in her, what do you call it, Indian.
Just came from shopping at
Whole
Foods.
Can we still say you're sitting Indian style? That's probably against the rules.
Probably.
Anyway, she was sitting Indian style in her chair, whatever the heck you call it, I don't know what else it's called. Anyhow, so she's sitting there, and she says, well, you know, the wolves will perfect our populations and actually they will strengthen the genetics of all of our animals because they only kill the dead and dying animals. And I was like, yeah, right. That's like we go to the grocery store and we pick the oldest produce. We get all the stuff that's out of date because we don't want to take any of the fresh stuff. We want to only take the rotten stuff.
You know, and that's hilarious, but what's really frightening about that is the ignorance.
It's agenda-driven, so it's faux ignorance.
But wasn't that person probably a useful idiot?
I don't think she was that useful.
when this hit the newspapers about this mass, you know, killing our sheep, some of the comments that came back and some of the personal emails to us, I just could not believe the ignorance. The misunderstanding about this, you know, and it's all, I guess, media driven, or they hear what they want to hear. It's selective hearing, but they really don't have an understanding of where their food comes from and how ranchers work. And, you know, it's so frightening that these people don't understand more about it.
Well, they don't. There are many things we told this story, I don't know, last week, week before, but one of the ranchers up in Scott Valley has lead on his property. So he took a big chunk of lead. They were talking about the bullet, you know, the bullet ban and all these other stupid gun laws that California's pushing. You know, they're done legislating bathrooms for children. Now they've moved on to our guns. And so he took this big piece of lead, and he was down there in the Capitol, and he took it into one of these guys that's trying to ban lead bullets because he's afraid that all the animals are going to get lead poisoning. And goes into the guy's office and sets down this chunk of lead and said, you know what this is? The guy's like, no. He said, it's lead. Oh, well, where did you get it? He goes, it's in my ground. It's on my ranch. And the guy, he looked at the guy, he goes, it's a naturally occurring element. And the guy looked at him super blank and said, oh, well, I thought they made that in a factory.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yep, it's amazing. He could dress himself,
the guy's ranch was subsequently designated for toxic waste cleanup.
Totally.
Jeez.
Call the EPA. I guess we better take another break, huh? Well, we let that sink in. Yeah, talk about dumb as a rock, huh? All right, we're going to be right back with you here at We the People Radio. We are talking to Cindy Sidaway. Pop into the website. I think you will be shocked by the pictures. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Was a brakeman on a highball traveling train. A mama, she raised four little children, and her family had a good name. And Papa and Mama wanted all for us they never had. Big brother, little brother, and sister too. None of them turned out half bad. Except me. The black sheep of the family.
And we're back.
Idiot America.
To all the idiots in America.
Controlled by the American media. That must be where the Indian-style sitter was educated, was in the media.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Cindy, do you guys, up where you are, who else is being severely affected by the wolves? Like, you're obviously not near a town, but how bad is it for all the cattle guys and everybody else?
Oh, you know, I've had a lot of calls just lately about up in the salmon area, the cattle that are being lost, and I mean, it's just a huge financial burden for the ranchers up in that area. And then the lifestyle of the people up closer to where our kill was, up in the Victor area of Idaho. It's a small farming community, but people have lived there their whole lives. And one lady told me that she's afraid to have her grandchildren play out in the back like she did, and her siblings, because they're next to the forest boundaries, and there's been multiple wolf sightings. And she's real cautious now about it. And others have seen wolves traveling through their pastures down, you know, more in the populated area. We have other ranchers around us that with sheep that are sustaining lots of losses also. And then we border Montana. We had a friend up there that had, I think, 122 rams killed not long ago in one night. So there are some big losses of others. They're just less of us, of course, you know, especially in the sheep industry. But one thing I wanted to bring up, the hunters should be outraged by this because the wolves have just decimated our natural elk herd here in Idaho. We would get a lot of the elk migrating out of Yellowstone Park, and that's down to about 25% of what it was initially when the wolves were first introduced. So it's a huge loss to the hunters.
Yeah, you would think that that community would rise up. Instead, they just went away. That's my understanding is that just they went away.
Yeah. Well, a lot of new people have moved in there. You know, several like the lady you spoke of, because it's over the hill from Jackson Hole. So we get a lot of implants, but the native folks up there that have, you know, spent their several generations are very, very concerned about what's happening in that community. And the thing about the Endangered Species Act overall, you know, it shouldn't hurt the community. It shouldn't hurt all our small farmers and ranchers, and it shouldn't hurt other species. You know, when you peg one animal against the other, and then, like the lady you were saying, you know, that it helps with the gene pool and everything. Well, it's decimated our elk herds here. I mean, once man starts to feel like he can manage everything better than natural management, I think, what arrogance.
Yeah, how historically arrogant. We've done so well with that.
Yeah.
We're such geniuses. Well, the funny part is just that they would even think that a predator, I mean, whether it's a, you know, in the ocean or on the land or whatever, but a predator would eat dead and dying animals. That's like us eating rotten produce.
Right.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's just stupid.
Yeah.
And besides, wolves, you know, kill for a variety of reasons, sport, teaching.
Well, see, and that's something we need to talk about maybe when we come back from our top of the hour break is what does a wolf pack look like? What does a wolf look like? Because people think, I mean, I think that the average person believes they're a lot smaller than they are.
That's a good point.
And let's talk about why they kill. It's really frightening when you catalog the actual details of a wolf, what motivates them, how they travel in packs, how quickly they breed, their reason for being.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole story.
How do your guys defend themselves out there, Cindy? Your shepherds.
Well, our herders all have rifles to defend themselves, and it is a worry because they're in such remote areas throughout the year. The problem with the wolves hitting at night, you know, you can't see to kill them. We do have one night scope. They're very expensive. We've invested some money in that. But if we had one person and that's all they did was monitor the wolves, we might could get a handle on it. But we don't have that one person that's trained, you know, because we can be 100 miles apart, one of our bands from another. We're just so spread out.
What's your total?
The logistics.
What's the total acreage you guys cover up there?
Probably about 400,000. That includes state leases, private land, deeded land, our own, and Forest Service and BLM. But we range from our winter range, and then our summer range is probably 120 miles away from where our winter range is.
Jeez.
So we're migrating all the time. We're always on the move.
Yeah, keeping track of 400,000 acres, that could get kind of costly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the wolves are all over the place, and they're fast, and they cover a lot of ground.
Yes.
Not easy.
They're very clever, too, about, you know, they're hunting. That one, they work in pairs, and one will distract the guard dog while the other moves in. I mean, the folks that are out there on the ground, you know, that monitor this, it's amazing how clever they are.
Slippery.
The wolves, they are. And they're very aggressive. They're much more aggressive than the, you know, the wolves that we have here naturally, because these are Canadian wolves. They're not, you know, the natural species that was here in the first place anyway.
Of course, and that's what we're going to get to.
They're far more aggressive.
All right, we're coming back. We're going to come back with Cindy Sidaway in 5 minutes. We've got a little news for you. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Got a chat room up and running. Bob, you want to tell them all the stuff about the station and stuff?
Sure. You're listening to the Pulse of the North State. Stay tuned for hour number two of We the People with your hosts, Aaron Ryan and Elizabeth Woodward on KCNR Shasta Reading.
We're back with hour two of We the People Radio with your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. We're talking about wolves, and it's not everything you think it is. And you know, basically, no matter what discussion we seem to have, it all goes back to the ignorance of the American public. You know, how easily people believe things without any research or any investigation on their own. They do not, they trust, they don't verify.
It sounds good. We were watching the video that was listed on the chat room, and it was a girl who was probably
12.
Yeah, she's 12.
I'm thinking 12 or 13.
Yeah, and she's talking about how, you know, when you go to testify at the wolf hearing, it's like,
and this is what you need to wear.
Yeah. Tell them about yourself. Tell them how much you want wolves and how furry they are. Oh, my God.
So we need to kind of paint a picture of the reality of it, because we've done that before. We've talked about what motivates a wolf, how big they really are, what their reason for being is, what's in their DNA.
Yeah, the video we watched right before it on the break was of a wolf taking down
a buffalo. Yeah.
And buffalo didn't stand a chance.
And how they breed and what they train their young to do.
Yeah, so sheep and cattle. They don't stand a chance. Actually, mm-hmm. Hey Cindy, tell us about your wool business and all that. Before we always do this, we run out of time, and it's like, oh, we forgot to ask her.
You know, years ago the wool market just plummeted, and the wool was worth absolutely nothing, and it cost us far more to shear the sheep than we'd ever get for the wool. So it was just a losing proposition, and of course you do have to shear every year. But something that used to be about 20% of our income was then a negative. And so my daughters and my daughter-in-law, we thought, well, this is just a shame. This is such a wonderful product that we're just not going to give it away. So we started to make wool blankets. And I found a mill that would take our raw wool and convert it into a design of ours and manufacture the blankets for us. So it's been a fun project. You know, it hasn't been a big money maker, but it's been very rewarding too. We kind of wanted to celebrate our heritage, and we did limited editions of different designs. And so, yeah, it's been kind of a fun project. And, you know, it's a wonderful product, and wool blankets last forever, ever and ever and ever. So they're high quality, and, yeah, we're real excited to do it.
That's cool. So for people that are not, you know, actually online with us right at the moment, it's sidawaywool.com, and I'll spell it SIDDOWAYWOOL.com, Sidaway Wool. And I thought we should promote that, because that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and then obviously you probably sell lamb, right?
Yes, our big that's the big thing we do. We sell lamb, and we have 120,000 pounds of wool. I only take a small part of that, maybe 10,000 pounds, and have it converted to blankets. So it's just a small part of what we do, but it's fun because I get to visit with people. I get to tell them about the sheep industry and the benefits of, you know, sheep, and that you can do all this with natural resources, you know, just grazing with sunshine and grass and produce this wonderful product.
Well, the sidawaywool.com website is awesome, because it gives the history of the family and the generations, and has all sorts of great pictures. You guys did a great job with that.
Oh, well, thank you.
It shows all the people, and, you know, I think that's the big thing. Now, so many people, everything is so packaged that people think that this was all, like when people would look at this website, they might think this was all a long time ago. But there's still, we still need ranchers and farmers and, you know, food still comes, you know, grows in the ground. And,
No. You just get it at the grocery store.
You just go to the grocery store. Yeah. Meat comes from the grocery store.
Preferably Whole Foods.
Yeah, right.
We are working on packaging our lamb, too, you know, with our own branded label. And so that's something that we're working on in the future that that people would know, you know, it's going to be produced just grass-fed and market our own branded lamb. So hopefully you get to see that sometime, too.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, my husband, when we first got together, Bill would make, his mom would always make lamb when we went to their house. And when I was a kid, my dad hated lamb, so we never ate lamb. But it was because my mom didn't know how to cook it. Actually, that apparently is what happened. My mom didn't know how to cook it. It really, she didn't grow up with that. She grew up in Spokane. I guess there wasn't a lot of lamb going on in Spokane. Bill did such a great job, you know, cooking this lamb. But store lamb, you know, a lot of times isn't great. And so we had this field. And we thought, well, hey, you know, let's make our own lambs. But boy, oh boy, was it hard to keep them alive. Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
You know, one time, you know, whoosh, an eagle flies away with one.
An eagle flew away with
one? Yeah, you know, they're not that heavy at the beginning, you know. Just not that
eagles
big.
Are a real predator for especially, right, you know, when the lambs are first born.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think there were any eagles left after all the windmills killed them.
Oh. Green power's taking our eagles out, but no, there's still some flying around sucking lambs off the ground. And then neighborhood dog. Mm. I'll never forget the first time I saw one of the lambs dead. I shouldn't laugh. It was weird. I looked out there and I thought, why is that one laying there? Just laying there, you know? So I got closer and closer and closer. And it literally looked like somebody took the grass catcher of a lawnmower and dumped it on the side of the lamb.
Oh.
Because they hadn't even digested the grass they ate. Literally, the dog, you know, hit their stomach, popped it open, and the grass all flew out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like busting open your grass catcher on your lawnmower.
Wow.
It was the weirdest thing. So they didn't really eat it. The lamb was laying there like it was sleeping with all this grass on it. So I guess
lots of predators kill for sport.
Yep,
you know, it's
just
not
killed it for the heck of it.
Eating. Yeah, they just kill for sport.
So, you know, all those people that are out there delusional thinking, you know, well, they don't kill that many animals because they're not that hungry. Well, that's really got nothing to do with it. They don't have anything better to do all day long. They kill our stuff. But lamb is a great meat. And, you know, especially like you're raising them just out there wild like that, not in pens. So what do you guys, are you going to do anything different? Or, you know, you just got to roll the dice and hope that doesn't happen again. I mean, how do you do that? You lose 176
sheep. Well, we are looking at more aggressive guard dogs. We use the Great Pyrenees. And so we're working with Wildlife Services to come up with maybe a more aggressive dog that can deter the wolves and still be gentle enough to be with the sheep. You know, there's a fine line there. And then, you know, maybe the collars, the spiked collars on the dogs would help. So we're looking at some different things. The range, you know, people say, well, just move. But, you know, these are historical ranges. We have these allotments through the Forest Service, many of them. And then some of it, of course, is private ground. So it's not that easy to move when you have that many sheep. And the wolves are moving into our area. You know, they're expanding. The numbers are expanding. The range is expanding all the time. And once the hunting started in Idaho, it did bring them down a little to help control somewhat because in 2009, boy, they were at a peak. I think we had almost 1,000 here in Idaho. And I question how they count these, you know. I don't know if they really have a good idea of how many we actually do have because there's so many things that go into whether they count. You know, they've got to be a breeding pair that produce two pups that live till December or something. And so initially Idaho was to have 10 breeding pairs. Now we have 35 that they count as breeding pairs. But up where our sheep were piled up, the wolves up there aren't even counted in those figures because they don't have those as a breeding pair up there yet.
Oh, jeez.
So they may have pups, but until they're, you know, they get all this... all the logistics, the definitions that match up, right, then they're not really counted in the mix. So the range is increasing so rapidly that I don't know if we could outrun them, or if why should we? We've already we've been removed from where the grizzly bear was, where we were historically. We moved out of that area because they wanted that area for the bears. And that's one of these things that where they changed the rules. You know, they want this area like Yellowstone Park and the surrounding area, but then it branches out and it branches out. They want 10 breeding pair, and then, no, they want more. Well, there's never going to be enough.
Right.
There's never going to, you know, for the groups, for some of these wildlife groups, because it's a funding source. You know, why do they want to reach the numbers they need? I mean, this is a funding source for them. So they don't want to, they want to have the issue in front of people all the time and not have an issue resolved ever.
Sure, because the bigger the issue is and the more people it takes to study it.
Mm-hmm.
Study it. And
the more funds come in.
Yep. Study it and manage it. And, well, look, we had one wolf that wandered here from Oregon, and it cost us $500,000. So,
is that Lonesome Larry or whatever they call
it? Lonesome Larry.
We called it OR7. I was kind of hoping he'd cruise down to Tahoe and eat a skier. You know, if it just ate one skier,
well,
we could end this whole thing.
It could eat one in Mount Shasta.
There you go, one skier in Mount Shasta, and that'd end that.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they realize, you know, they think that these are kind of a romanticized, very romanticized animal.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you hear about the grandkids, you know, the grandkids go up to, you know, out to the ranch or the farm or whatever, and they're not allowed to really play outside.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not safe.
So what's the average size of a wolf?
I don't know. These are such large wolves, larger, I think, than the ones that were native here. I'm not really sure. They're massive. I've seen them, you know, and I've seen one, I think, Congressman Simpson, Mike Simpson, has one in his office in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go in there, he's got one stuffed. But, yeah, I'm not sure of the weight. But they are massive, and they're killing machines.
Yeah, they are.
They are very, very efficient killers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
take down an elk, you know, they've got to be pretty big.
Well, when this all started, were you there? When did the whole ESA thing, and they started bringing in more?
They started, I understand that in the 60s they started talking about ways to control the elk population in Yellowstone Park. I think that was the initial talking, you know, that they said this is a way we could do it. And then through the 70s, I was involved. My husband and I were married in the early 70s, and so we were very involved through some of those initial talks. And then through the 80s, at that time we had Senator McClure from Idaho that talked about this 10J non-essential population to introduce it. And so we've been involved every step of the way, fought it vigorously. But I did sit down with, you know, Defenders of Wildlife and other wildlife groups. And, you know, I tried to see their point. I did. I tried to understand it.
God,
and I thought,
you.
You know, I don't mind wolves. I don't mind them. Let them be up in the park. Let people enjoy them up there. I just don't want them affecting my livelihood and in my backyard.
Well, especially not unfettered, and that's the problem. As soon as the door opens, then suddenly, you know, well, it's only on Tuesday if they have a breeding pair. There are all these weird restrictions that I think they said in Oregon they count about half of what's there. So whatever it is, usually double it. I guess we have to take a break. I got all carried away. I was playing on the chat room. I was reading about your blankets, talking to you, and I forgot what time it was. Clumsy me. Hey, if you want to call us, better do it swiftly. 530-605-4567, or just drink coffee and listen. Either way, works for us. You're listening to We the People on KCNR 1460 AM.
We are wolves and wolves worried. We are this planet's kidney stone.
So Bert from Doris called and told us in British Columbia the wolves are 200 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when you and I talked about this before, Aaron, because we had another show, and we went into detail about what they look like, what they do with their pups, how they train them to kill for sport. I mean, that is what they do. But I seem to remember that from head to toe, if you stood one up, they were 7 or 8 feet tall.
Yeah, some of them. Mm. They're this isn't... You know,
it's not like the
This is no small problem.
It's not like the wolf hybrid dogs that people have.
Sure,
that are pets. Nothing like that.
No. Hey, and speaking of dogs, Cindy, what about the Anatolian Shepherds as far as guard dogs? You ever use those?
Yeah, no, we've got one, and then we've got some mixed breeds with that and the Pyrenees. But still. You know, the dogs, they just can't seem to hold their own. Of course, when I hear 200 pounds, I understand why, because some of our guard dogs are maybe 130, our biggest, but, yeah, they just can't hold their own with them. But, yeah, there's another one. I don't know if it's from Russia, but Wildlife Services is going to try some on a trial basis. But one thing, you know, I kind of do a clipping so I know what's happening with wolves all over, and they're a problem internationally, you know, over in... And France and Spain and Russia, I mean, they're really a problem. In Russia, especially with people. You know, they're losing people all the time to wolves. So it's, it sounds like it's what fairy tales are made of. But yeah, they're vicious, these wolves.
Well, and it's very, it took us, and I used to know the statistic, we had somebody on that told us that, how long it took us to eradicate, you know, wolves over the years.
Yeah.
I guess you have to kill half the adult population every year just to maintain the population mm-hmm. level and not have it grow.
Yeah.
So, obviously, well, we're not killing half the adults.
Yeah, it exceeded far more than the projected numbers. The population has exceeded those numbers, and the predator losses, the death losses, have exceeded what, you know, they were all calculating way back when.
Yeah, it's somebody also was saying on the chat room that I remember seeing that too. Somebody posted it on the Pie and Politics website with a guy holding a dead wolf up with the front paws on his shoulders, and it looked like a bear. Remember that? It was a big,
yes,
dark,
I remember that.
You know, really dark, dark brown
mm-hmm.
fur.
Mm-hmm.
They can be gigantic. So those were not native animals in your area when that all first started up there.
No, we had the gray timber wolf. This is a Canadian. It's like a subspecies.
So how did they explain that they got to endanger a species that wasn't native to your area? What did they say to you guys?
Good question. Just trickery, I think. You know, they changed the rules again to make it fit what they want to do. It's just incredible that this all went on. You know, it's so upsetting. And when I saw that dead pile, it just brought back all these years, all this frustration. And I thought, look where we are now. You know, and the fact they're using the children, like in your upcoming, you know, when you're having the hearings, that's what that was done years ago. They'd go into the classroom and
well, I think
different groups.
That little girl that's in the video, I think they need to get her one of these wolves as a pet.
Right.
I mean, let her actually have one.
Or let her actually see what they do.
Yeah.
You
actually,
know,
I think she should let her dog play with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll just let it go with that, huh?
That's despicable to use children though mm-hmm. to do this. I think
because they have no, I mean their brains aren't even fully developed. They have no personal life experience. I mean that's abuse, child abuse, in my opinion.
Well, you know, talk to some of these kids. You know, these little videos of
mm-hmm.
the kids who have to wait for a bus in New Mexico in a cage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, talk to those kids about the wolves.
Yeah,
right.
A lot of those kids are winding up with kind of a version of, well, it's basically post-traumatic stress because they're being stalked all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why would we, do that?
You know, yeah. Talking about being stalked, you know, you don't have to have actual kills to have losses, though, because we just came off the mountains from that one herd that had the wolves in it most of the summer, and they're not grazing, they're not eating, you know, they're looking over their shoulder, so to speak. I mean, they're stressed, so they're not gaining, and so you have a huge loss on, you know, productivity too. They're just not producing. So there's a lot of loss factors that, you know, that you have to really consider when wolves are in the area.
Well, that makes sense too. And so what's the future of this for you guys? You just keep dealing with it and they just keep driving, like your neighbors and, you know, other people in your industry. What's the long range plan?
You know, we've really talked a lot about this to see, you know, what we are going to do, because so many have gone out of the sheep business for many reasons. We lost several historic ranching families over the grizzly bear. Totally went out of business because they just couldn't compete, nor did our government support them. We have Forest Service. Of course, we're a big public land state here in Idaho, and we utilize those lands as best we can. But when they're not utilized for multiple use, although that's the mandate of the Forest Service, it's multiple use, that's not always the case. So when you don't have that support from the government anymore, and the numerous lawsuits that are filed that ties everything up in court all the time, then you just wonder if it's worth it. We have been at it so long. You know, we want to continue, and my husband and I felt like we were just stewards of this operation and wanted to pass it off to our children who are involved now. But you can only do it for so long when economically you just can't sustain it any longer. So we're going to try some new dogs, try some different things. We might have to downsize a little so we'll have more manpower to monitor better. I don't think that we could find new range because I don't think there's any available. I think we just have to, you know, maintain the allotments that we have on our private ground here. But I want to stay in it because I love the business, and I don't want to think that, you know, we're going to be forced out of it. But economically, you know, we'll really have to look at the numbers and see.
That is, and that's brutal because that's food. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
it isn't like you guys are doing this for entertainment or mm-hmm. or anything like that. This is food,
yeah,
for people. I'm looking at some pictures. There's a really good Facebook page. Hold on here. Let me actually get the name of it. That is called Kill the Wolves in Idaho. It's fairly straightforward. And on the Facebook page of Kill the Wolves in Idaho, It has pictures. So for those people that are, you know, I mean, kind of unclear on how big these things might be, holy cow, there are some really amazing pictures. There's a guy, I mean, he looks like a full-size grown man, and he's got this wolf laid out in front of him sort of on a snowbank. This thing is probably 1.5 Jonathan Winters's. I was like, who's that big? This thing is gigantic. I'm sure it's every bit of 200 pounds. And then they've got some that are, you know, kind of stretched out lengthwise. And another guy's got his hand by this wolf's mouth is kind of open. And he's got his hand with his fingers spread out kind of by its teeth. And this wolf's big tooth is every bit the size of the guy's little finger. You know, probably about that long. That's a tremendous, tremendous predator to be exempting from really from management.
God, look at the teeth on that thing.
I know, it's funny. It's almost like the you know, the Little Red Riding Hood thing. I mean, it is. Look at the teeth on that thing.
Holy cow.
And this is what will be...
Better to eat you, my dear.
Exactly. That's, I know when I first looked at it, I was like, that's why they wrote that book. The problem is that once you bring these in, I mean, our country, you know, used to have all these animals, and that was great, but we can't support that now. You know, how long before they wind up, you know, before they wind up eating people, like Russia? I didn't realize they were eating people in Russia. That is that's a hot
tip. Well, that's what eventually, will happen. It will. It's just a matter of time, because they will. You know, some say they won't kill people, but they do. And just the circumstances have to be right. And that's really unfortunate. And, you know, years ago when wolves were here, they didn't have restrictions. You know, we managed them. You managed them. You
sure.
took care of them. They come in now with all these protections in place and all this government interference. And the bottom line, what's really sad, we're paying for it. We're paying for all of this.
That's a really good point. I don't think we hit that hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
This costs us a ton of money. So not only now, I mean, okay, so for the people who say, well, I want people to be paid to manage wolves, great. Well, you're prepared to double your grocery bill?
Mm-hmm. Because
mm-hmm. all this stupidity costs money. It's interesting. There's a poster. It's got a black guy, a white guy, an Asian guy, and a wolf. Okay, so these four pictures side by side. And it says, racial profiling is wrong. What the hell?
Yeah.
And the website is heartofthewolf.org. And so the guy on the above it, on the Facebook page, the comment is, what does racial profiling have to do with wolves? Absolutely nothing, but it demonstrates how mentally ill these people truly are.
Right.
It's like, well said. Yeah, can you believe that? I mean, that's obviously a poster from the heartofthewolf.org website. They actually think it's like racial profiling.
Well, you know, some of these wolf lovers are so extreme that some of the hate mail that we received was vicious. I mean, absolutely vicious, blaming us for having sheep up there that we baited wolves in, and then the wolves, some of them were killed, of course, by Wildlife Services, and so it was all our fault, and, you know, they were going to get us, and we'd be sorry. And
what?
It was vicious. It was, and, well, you know,
they think you did that on purpose?
Yes, yeah. See, they have no understanding. They have no understanding.
And they don't want to.
No. They're just extremists.
You killed all your sheep on purpose.
Yes, staged it. We staged it. We staged it all.
So you could kill, how many wolves did you get to kill?
Well, there were 176 there, but yeah, we've had, far more killed so far this year. I think we're about 195 or 200 overall this year.
Right, yeah. but I mean, how many wolves got, I mean, I know how
many. Oh, how many wolves were killed?
Yeah, how many wolves actually got killed?
I'm not sure how many they took out. You know, there was a pack there. They didn't take them all out, but they did take some. I don't know, 8 maybe? I'll have to find out for sure. But, yeah, they did go in and clean out some of that pack. The federal trappers did. We didn't. The trappers did.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So the comparison isn't... okay, so give the stats again. 176 sheep...
In the one incident that night, yes, piled up.
And so altogether, you said in the last, what, year, 190-something?
Yeah, we're in the 190s, and we're still, I haven't got reports from, and these are confirmed kills. These are actually confirmed, not just the probable. These are the reports I get from Wildlife Services on our sheep alone.
Oh, shoot. Okay. So
we're not through yet, and we'll have some losses as, you know, the fall goes on, too, but... yeah, that we're talking about one incident, that pileup. That next, but two days after that, we were hitting two other herds, you know, with losses. I think 4 one night and maybe 5 the next. And so, yeah, it just adds up through the, you know, as the year goes on.
God, you guys are like hometown buffet for the wolf population.
Yes, yeah.
That is that's not helpful. I'm sorry. I was going to ask you, what's your restriction? Because, like, in Oregon and some of those places, the restriction on, you know, on your ability to actually take the wolves out. I mean, they have, like, what, the teeth in the meat provision? I mean, they have to actually be biting your grandkids before you get to shoot them legally.
Well, you have, they can be, initially that's how it was here, yeah, that you have, you know, they had to be killing, in the act of killing to actually do it. But now, since they've been delisted here in Idaho, the fact that they're in the sheep with the potential to kill them, that we or our agents can act right then without a kill permit. But, you know, anyone else couldn't do that. It's just that we're ranchers and they're, you know, in our livestock right at the time. And that's just happened the last few years since the delisting. But before, very restrictive. You know, same kind of with the grizzly bear. You've got to be under threat of losing your own life before you can take action on a grizzly bear.
Nice. And so
that's similar to the wolves in these other states.
Okay, now the listing, you guys are delisted federally, but is it listed as a state endangered species?
Well, Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana were able to delist it just in this population here, but not throughout the United States, just these three states, because we have our management plans in place. And that was fought extensively in the courts. Fish and Wildlife thought that, you know, we'd reached our numbers, that part of the promise was, yeah, they would be delisted here, but that went on in a court battle and was appealed, and finally they we were successful in the delisting in the three states up here.
But
we have more flexibility than the other states.
Okay, and your state fish and game, are they still listed with them?
Listed as threatened? No.
Okay, because we're not listed federally in California, but they're looking to list them with the state.
Right, right.
So I
don't think they are here now. They've been taken off. But adhere to the management plan. You know, if they fall below a certain number, then they go right
back on.
We have to adhere to our state management plan at all times.
Oh, okay. So once you start
the state the state does the management, but it's the Federal Wildlife Services that comes in to help with, you know, the removal if we have any incidents with depredation.
Oh, so it does provide ongoing stupidity and cost.
Yes.
There is no end in sight. All right. Well, so we're clear on where we're headed if people in California don't pull it together and fight back. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM. Oh, what a nice little song, Bob. Does it end with growling and biting?
I don't know. Let's find out.
I'm counting the cracks on the wall by my bed, 'cause I can't get to sleep. And my mother said to try counting sheep as they're jumping the fence, but the fence has a hole and the sheep snuck out their tails. Celebration farmer, Sammy's calling out their names, but she's yelling too loud and I can't get to sleep, and it's all on account of those runaway sheep.
Who's that I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood.
Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood, you sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
Listen to me!
And you know who's wearing the Little Red Riding Hood outfit is that little girl that does the video encouraging people to go testify.
Ugh. Yeah. So
you were telling us that song was played at your wedding.
Yeah, when I got married
the first
time.
Would you like to explain that, please?
Yeah, you know what? When you marry a biker, those are the kinds of songs they play. My mom was like, what the heck? Go figure. Yes, the flashbacks.
Okay, so where do we stand in California right now?
We're kind of hosed.
The wolf issue.
Good point. Robert updated the webpage. So wethepeopleradio.us, you can read about Sitaway wool, and junipermountain.net. We should talk about that too for a sec. You can read about this sheep kill. So just in case, you know, you saw pictures of it on the internet and you were thinking, oh, that can't be real. No, that was real. And it lists the U.S. Fish and Wildlife hearing details Wednesday, October 2nd in Sacramento. So if you can possibly make that, there is a there's an RSVP there for the Americans for Prosperity. There's a luncheon, and there's... So if you're thinking, well, I'd like to go, I'd like to fight back on this, but I don't know anything, and I don't have time to do the research, not to worry. They've got it all figured out. Go early. And let's face it, it's just a numbers game. You know, we're going to have a big-time environmental crowd there, and the problem is a lot of people that oppose the environmental stupidity are working.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all working.
Yeah,
while
we can pay for them.
Yeah, so what happens is we wind up underrepresented. So let's not do that if you can possibly be there. So September 2nd in Sacramento, 12 noon.
October 2nd?
October 2nd, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Clarion Inn, Arden Way is where the luncheon and the education is going to happen. And then the hearing is in the Martinique Ballroom, at 5 o'clock. Doors open. And 6:30 to 8:30 is the hearing and public comment. So that's all on there. Phone number for any information is, I'll give you that in a second, because I always hate when they do that on the radio. They say, here's the phone number, they rattle it off.
Really fast.
And like you don't have a pen in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've been given enough time now. It is 805-229-1117. So it's 805-229-1117. There you have it. Okay.
And it's always on the website at wethepeopleradio.us. So
correcto.
Everything is always there. You can always go back and get the information.
But I know there are people who listen and they're like, you know, everybody doesn't have a computer. Can't you just hear them? They'd be writing us mean notes on the chat room, but they don't have a computer, so.
Thank goodness.
So I have to hear them in the back of my mind. Hey, Cindy, so throughout this whole thing, what do your kids think of all this? What do the younger folks in your area, what are they looking at?
Well, you know, you mean the young kids or my own children?
Well, your own kids or you know, kids their age, because I know what we all think. We all think this stuff is nuts. But these guys have been, you know, they've had this green agenda and this environmental stuff for all these years.
Uh-huh. Well, my kids, unfortunately, you know, were raised on a ranch, so although they're aware of, you know, all the green stuff, they have a real practical, common sense approach to life. You know, they know where their food comes from. They know that they should work hard all day long, every day.
Oh, so you're an abuser.
without working for it. So I'm real proud of my own children because of their work ethic, and a lot of that came from, you know, raising children on the farm and the ranch. And I was so fortunate because I worked right along with my husband the whole time and I could have my children with me every day. So part of raising sheep in my life was raising my children right along with that and teaching them to have a strong work ethic and to, you know, be proud of doing a day's work and not to ever take anything for granted. You know, we're blessed where we live, with lots of wonderful natural resources. But, you know, they're well-educated, they understand the political ramifications, and they're probably shrewder than I am about expressing themselves, you know, through the media. I think my son is very frustrated, of course, because it's hard work for him. But I'm seeing through this last pile-up and the news coverage on it that a lot of people in Idaho have come up to me and they're really frustrated. I see that frustration in them that, you know, this is happening and we contribute a lot to the local economy. And so they feel like that's threatened also, that we are out of touch with where our, you know, where the nation is going as it becomes more urban and there's less rural influence. And so for me and my children, that's kind of sad to see where we're headed, the lack of information and the lack of knowledge from good common sense approach to living.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of brutal, and a lot of these kids, they just see they don't see the teeth on the wolf. You know, they see, like, you ever notice that all the propaganda pictures of wolves, all their mouths are closed? Kind of.
But initially, when the wolf reintroduction started, they focused on the school children and said, you know, we're going to bring in these wolves, these 66 wolves into Yellowstone and Idaho, and you can name them. Let's name them. You know, so they became kind of pets to the children in the school. So they bought on.
Oh.
Even friends of mine's children were really pro-wolf, and now I show them what's happened, and they understand, you know, how they were brainwashed in school.
Wow. And so the people that, let's go back to the folks that you have heard from since this all happened. How many, you know, just kind of percentage-wise, how many of them thought you were making it up?
Well, no one in this area. These were posts that came, you know, where you can comment from a news article.
Oh.
So there were from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, you know, just other places, if they'd put where, you know, where they were from. You know, a few over, I think, Oregon, we had a few. But I don't know if there are any here locally in Idaho. There, you know, could have been maybe over in the Boise area. My husband's a state senator, so he's used to getting a lot of hate mail.
But, right.
Yeah.
We're immune to your hate mail.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, for the folks in California, especially our ranchers and farmers who really have for the most part, not risen up in force and said no to this. In fact, a lot of our Farm Bureau and cattlemen's associations and stuff are, well, you know, we want to make sure that we just have good restrictions and there's a good compensation plan in place. And, you know, somehow they think this is all going to be, you know, like a fair fight.
See,
what would you tell them from the other side?
Yeah. You know, I was there in that same situation, and I try to get along. I do. I always have, and I've tried to understand the other perspective. And I'm an animal lover. I'm a huge animal lover. I always have been. So I did try to understand, try to work with them, try to sit down with them, but they changed all the rules. They changed the rules. I feel cheated. I feel like I should have demanded more and fought harder. And, yeah, if I could go back and do it again, I would have fought bitterly against having them ever reintroduced here in the first place. So, yeah, I would say, to not let down your defenses at all, because what they say is not what they're going to do.
Well, and you know, we've so many conservatives have made that mistake along the way. We assume that we're playing by the same set of rules, that we have the same moral code, the same integrity, the same sense of responsibility, and we are playing, it's not a level playing field, it's completely different.
It is.
That's our mistake.
Yeah.
That is our mistake. And, you know, it's funny. I was looking online. There's a great T-shirt available. If you just looked up Laura Zombie, Zombie, there's a Red Riding Hood T-shirt on here. And it's got the big black wolf and Red Riding Hood in her little coat. But she's carrying a machine gun. The wolf staring at her.
I wonder if it's an AR-15.
I don't know,
yeah,
but I thought...
With night vision. Yeah, she needs night vision.
Night vision. Well, I figured that would be fun to wear to Sacramento. So if you're planning on going to Sacramento and you just couldn't decide what to wear, yeah, you might look online. I know, there I go again. You might look online, though, and find yourself a nice Red Riding Hood shirt, because that sends a good message.
Mm-hmm.
Since the governor's trying to decide how many of the gun bills to sign. I'm sure he's agonizing over that. Do we have to take another break?
We do need one more break.
Oh, sorry. You know, the break thing just sneaks up on me. God love the advertisers. I'm always trying to cheat them of their airtime. thank you for putting up with us, advertisers. Hey, we'll be right back for the last 10 minutes of We the People Radio. It is now too late to call in, so you've missed your opportunity. We'll be back with Cindy Sitaway here at We the People on KCNR 1460 AM. And that is all.
Looking back in anger, stirred a little town. It stained your dress, clogged up my face, put a wedge between our stained grace. Something so young and pretty never be released. We place our bets, we take our pick. They wind up in the belly of the beast. And when you can't get what you want, you take anything you can. So I wear the suit.
And we're back.
Hopefully in limited numbers, the wolves are survived.
Wrapping up another issue of We the People Radio.
Check. All right, Cindy. Closing thoughts?
I appreciate the opportunity to that, you know, to talk about this and hopefully to educate some of your listeners and prepare them for maybe what might be happening in your state. You've got a lot of sheep ranchers there, cattle ranchers, and, you know, do a lot of produce. So I think this is important to your state and to really get involved, because I don't think this is where you'd want to go as a state.
No. And once this starts, it's too late, Meow.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, there's no coming back. They never get enough, you know. Well, look at the coho salmon. Now we've got to tear out the dams and you know, I mean, it just sets off all sorts of this wave of craziness.
And bottom line, I think it is control. You know, these although maybe there was good intent when some of these pieces of legislation were enacted, that they've been taken over and they're used to control us and our lands and our way of life, and that's not a good thing.
No. And drive people out. How many of your neighbors are seriously considering not continuing in there?
Oh, you know, there's so many that have left the sheep business. We're down to, just probably in Idaho alone, I think we only have probably 7 range operations left.
Oh, my gosh.
That were thousands, you know, several years ago. So,
7?
Yeah, we're way, way down to the type of operation we have. There's still farm flock groups, but to have a range operation, yeah, I think there's 7 of us left.
What does farm flock groups mean?
That's someone that raises their, you know, sheep just on private ground. It's, you know, they might have a few hundred, whereas we'll have, you know, 20,000. Mm-hmm. And we migrate. A range operation is, yeah, they're migrating over range. They're not in controlled fences, and that's the difference. The numbers.
Are the guys with fences doing any better? I mean, are they able to?
No. And that's on private land. No, they're not. They're having losses, but that's not their main source of income.
It's
something that they do, and you know, they'll have other sources of income on the side. But still, it hurts economically. It hurts.
Yeah, that's just crazy, and it just never, you know, it never ends. What are they trying to do with them now? Are you guys watching any other ESA stuff come on the heels of this now that they've kind of crested the wave and it's on its
The big thing coming our way right now is bighorn sheep. You know, that's another issue that's going to control, some of the public land grazing. Because, you know, the grazing is all tied into this, too, and there's those groups that are anti-grazing. So when I was in the mountains the other day when we were shipping lambs years ago, it was just, you know, we were just there. We were shipping our lambs. When I was there the other day, there were hundreds of people there utilizing the mountains. You know, the public lands are really being used a lot by the people that never did do that on the weekends. You know, they're hunting and they're riding horses and they're just packing and hiking. And so the utilization of the lands has changed considerably over the last 20 years. And I see that will increase with more leisure time. With people that they're getting out there and they're using them more. So, you know, the makeup of man up in those mountains has changed a lot, too.
You know, I was reading...
Yeah, it's evolving.
I was reading an article on the Drudge Report just a short while ago, and they're talking about wild packs of dogs roaming the streets of Detroit now that Detroit has been decimated. And it just, you know, it kind of reminds me of what they're trying to do to the West. You know, they're trying to get us off the land and let it rewild. And look what it's done to Detroit. People aren't safe in their own homes.
No, if you can call those homes. Cindy, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Very much. You guys have a great day in Idaho. We'll be back with everybody next week. We will be talking about training for treason. We'll be moving the control agenda to the Common Core curriculum.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks. Well, thank you, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Elizabeth. And, folks, we'll see you next week. And many, many thanks to Debbie Bacigalupi for bringing us Cindy Sitaway for today's program.
And you should friend Debbie Bacigalupi on Facebook. She's got lots of great information.
BACI. If you do Debbie BACI, you'll probably get there.
KCNR, Chef.